will talk with a guest cybersecurity expert and law professor about reforming the NSA, the National Security Agency, this hour. Following all the revelations about how widespread this surveillance is, coming from NSA leaker, some say whistleblower, Edward Snowden. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, December 10th. Yesterday, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and five other tech companies urged President Obama to overhaul the country's surveillance laws and urged Washington to lead the way in a worldwide reform of state-sponsored spying. We will talk about what the big tech companies recommended as reforms in an open letter to the president, and we'll talk about our guests' proposed reforms, which include splitting the NSA in two. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions. Do you think the calls for reform are an overreaction, or do you think the NSA's spying is out of control? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Fred Kate, Distinguished Professor and C. Ben Dutton Professor of Law at Indiana University. He's also the director of the university's Center for Applied Cybersecurity Research. He specializes in information privacy and security law issues. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. I know that there have been calls to reform the NSA over the past several months. And now we have eight big technology companies jumping on board with this open letter to President Obama and Congress yesterday. How big an impression is this going to make with policymakers in Washington?
I think this is a pretty significant step. I mean, many of us have said throughout this entire controversy, you know, which began back in May, that the only thing that was going to move the president would be industry and major economic players weighing in. It wasn't going to be civil libertarians or unhappy members of Congress. And suddenly we have these eight giant IT companies, companies that really can't agree on anything. I mean, they are the bitterest of competitors. And they've suddenly come together to say to the president, this is hurting not only civil rights and civil liberties, but it's also hurting business in America, and it's time to do something about it.
Yeah. Why are those big tech companies getting involved?
Well, the way that they describe it, and I think this is true both behind the scenes and in their ads and newspapers across America yesterday, is that, you know, the Internet really fundamentally depends on the public's trust. If you don't believe that your transactions are safe, if you don't believe that your communications are safe, you may very well choose not to use it, or you may use it less. And so for many businesses, not just IT businesses, but for banks and for other companies, the Internet dramatically reduces the cost of doing business. You know, a financial transaction online is much cheaper than if you drive into your bank and you actually require the services of a teller. And so taking steps in order to enhance the public's trust so that the public won't think everything I do online is instantly shared with the federal government, those are going to be critical to business going forward.
Well, the companies that wrote the letter, Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, Yahoo, AOL, and LinkedIn, say their calls for reform are based on five principles, being limiting government authority to collect user information, increased oversight and accountability of intelligence agencies, more transparency concerning government demands for information, respect for the free flow of information across borders, and a framework to govern information requests between countries. What are your initial thoughts on you know, those principles, and do you think any are particularly good or interesting?
Well, I think they're actually quite sensible. I mean, I have a very positive reaction to this, as you might expect, as somebody who's been concerned about the NSA for some time now. I think several things are striking. One is that the call for overall transparency, so that the businesses ought to be able to say more about their relations with the government, if they're getting subpoenas, if they're getting demands for cooperation, not the individuals to whom those demands apply, but rather the broad set of relationship factors, so that, again, the public could decide. I would prefer one vendor over another. because of the degree to which they may cooperate with sharing data with the government. Another sort of interesting view of these is that they're very international in scope, and I think one of the things that has helped to motivate them is the sense the U.S. is so far out of step with other governments that now these companies are getting pressure from other governments saying, we don't know that we trust you if you do business in the U.S. or you do business with the U.S. government. And so looking for that kind of global governance framework to try to put some principles in place that would apply across borders.
You presented to a group reviewing NSA's role several suggestions to overhaul the NSA, the agency, what it does and how it does it. Among your reforms is to split it in two so that one side deals with cybersecurity and the other side with collecting intelligence. What's your thinking here?
Well, you may recall that the president in this fall appointed a review committee of five people in order to meet with experts in this area and bring a set of recommendations to the president, which they're expected to do any day now. As part of that, a number of us were invited to submit comments, and I thought one critical place to start is the NSA has long had a fundamental conflict of interest in its mission. It has two missions. One of them is to protect our secrets in the United States, to protect the government infrastructure, and the other is to obtain other people's secrets elsewhere. And so this has long raised the question, for example, if the agency knew about a flaw in Microsoft or in Outlook or in Google, would it try to fix that flaw or would it exploit it? Fixing it would serve its first mission of protecting the U.S. infrastructure. Exploiting it would serve its second mission. I think what we've learned over the summer is that the NSA actually has encountered that conflict more directly. You know, part of the documents that Snowden provided to the press and the press have now released, you know, show that the NSA has actually participated in compromising cybersecurity standards, working to introduce backdoors into products and services. And this seems to reflect this fundamental conflict between its two missions, you know, protect our secrets, steal theirs. So one way to help both manage the NSA as well as to avoid this conflict is divide those two missions into two different agencies so that each would have a clear and somewhat less conflicted mission, and each would be somewhat more manageable because they'd be a little smaller and therefore maybe less terrifying to lawmakers.
Mm. What would this do, though, to the collection of all of our, you know, our cell phone data and our phone calls, our emails and other data?
It might do nothing for that particular issue, but what it would mean is that the NSA would have to use more direct means to collect data. It couldn't just collect it by exploiting vulnerabilities that it had introduced into the system. It would have to stick with the process that Congress has put in place where it would go to a court, it would get authorization, and then it would act pursuant to that authorization. It would also mean that individuals would have a little bit of a better chance to protect ourselves, so that if you were engaged in, you know, sensitive financial transactions or sensitive political discussions, you would be able to use technologies such as encryption technologies that the NSA would not have knowingly introduced vulnerabilities into. So instead, the NSA, again, would have to follow the traditional path of going to a court, getting authorization, and then trying to decrypt the communication.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any insider information on what this report that President Obama is supposed to get any day now that would, I understand, could propose curbs on NSA spying?
I don't have any specific insider information. I have speculation along with many other people. I think what we will certainly see is not anything as bold as split the agency. The review commission are people who are very smart in this area, but they've all worked for the administration. They've all had high office in Washington. They're likely to bring more what I would call minor adjustments, tinkering, rather than real change. I think one thing we could expect is that the current process under which the government does seek judicial authorization is done in secret, and it's done without any opposition. Nobody stands up and says, wait a minute, privacy rights might be compromised here. So one proposal being widely discussed is to empanel a group of sort of public interest advocate lawyers who would have high-level security clearances and would appear before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to sort of argue the other side, to argue why surveillance in a particular case might not be warranted. I think we will see things like that.
We are talking with Fred Kate. He is a distinguished professor of law at Indiana University, and we are talking about reforming the NSA. And we're wondering what thoughts, what questions you have. How concerned are you, have you been, about the NSA tracking your personal information, phone calls, emails, etc.? Does this make you feel safer, or do you think it is overreach? 1-800-642-1234. What kinds of NSA reforms do you think should be implemented? Talking about this because the president is expected to get a report this week about NSA reforms and Apple, Google, Microsoft, and some other tech companies this week, yesterday, sent an open letter to President Obama and Congress urging the overhaul of the country's surveillance laws. What do you think? Your reactions? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest about reforming the NSA, the National Security Agency, and we are welcoming your questions and how you would like to see it reformed at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Yesterday, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and five other tech companies urged President Obama and Congress to overhaul the country's surveillance laws and urged Washington to lead the way in a worldwide reform of state-sponsored spying. What do you think ought to happen? We are talking with Fred Kate, who is a professor of law at Indiana University. He's also the director of the university's Center for Applied Cybersecurity Research. He specializes in information privacy and security law issues. And Jonathan on Facebook posts, Professor Kate, I support abolishing the NSA. Your response to that?
Well, I think it's a widely shared view. It's not my view because, let's face it, collecting intelligence is something that governments have been doing for centuries. This is not anything new. The big change seems to be the amount of data to which they have access. So they used to have fairly limited information they could get electronically because we didn't live so much of our lives electronically. Now everything we do is captured electronically, our movements, our communications, our transactions, what we read, what we watch, all of this. So there's a lot more data they can get access to. Another big change, and this is a place where there's been a lot of pressure for legislative reform, and that is the NSA for the first four decades that it existed only collected data abroad. So it was focused on what are other people doing in other countries. Suddenly, and secretly, without any notice to us, the NSA has started collecting data about us in the United States. And I think this is a major shift that again, requires a public debate. The public and Congress and the press should have an opportunity to weigh in on it.
What is the government's reasoning for having this huge surveillance program?
Well, the government makes a number of claims, and again, I think they each have some credibility. I don't think any of them are fantastic. I just disagree with them. One is that how do you find the needle in the haystack if you don't first collect the hay? And they use this metaphor again and again that you need to first put your arms around information in order to find the tiny bit of information that matters. So, for example, with the Verizon metadata order, the order that Snowden made public in June, in which we now know that the government's collecting the data about all of our phone calls every day, billions of calls a day, it turns out in 2012 the government only used about 300 of those. So it collected billions, it used 300, but its argument is it needed the data in order to identify those 300 that really mattered. The other argument is that so much of the information technology infrastructure in the world is provided in the U.S., And after the 9/11 attacks, when those terrorists were actually living in the U.S., the NSA has argued that it is necessary to conduct surveillance domestically in order to carry out its mission to prevent and deter terrorism and to collect foreign intelligence.
So what kind of actual harm has been done to anybody whose phone calls or emails or web histories have been monitored?
Okay, so this is the great question, and it is very hard to answer because, of course, so much of this is classified. Unless courtesy of Mr. Snowden or somebody else, we've gotten information about it, we often don't know. But I think the harm comes in a variety of categories. One is we know that there have been abuses of the data, and these have been well documented. It turns out the Inspector General of the NSA has documented thousands of cases of abuse. One that is fairly common within the NSA, they've actually given a name to. So they add the word INT, I-N-T, to like signals intelligence becomes SIGINT. They now have LOVEINT because agents look at the communications of their spouses, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, or their would-be girlfriends or boyfriends in order to get information about them. So this would be one type of abuse where it clearly is an abuse. It's illegal. Another type of abuse is a longer-term issue, and that is we right now seem to be thinking, and maybe for good reason, that our government is doing the right thing and is acting honorably. One might question that given the amount of testimony before Congress that the NSA has given, which has turned out to be false, and was many times given under oath and turned out to be false. But we also don't have to think that far back to remember a president such as, say, Richard Nixon, who abused the power of his office, including at that time trying to use the power of the IRS to deter political enemies. Well, imagine putting this power in the hands of any president, which is all of the data about any person in the United States. That would be a pretty powerful tool to use. And then the third area where we worry is for people who are expressing less than mainstream, other than mainstream ideas. And so there was actually a report this morning on NPR about a report about authors who say, look, particularly those that advocate causes that are not popular in the United States, that they feel that they are the subject or could be the subject of political repression.
Lots of callers. Saul and Stevens Point is with us first. Good morning, Saul.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I'm really stumped. Here's the NSA building server farms like crazy. What? And the CIA has the same function as the NSA now, except I might have this wrong, but I thought the NSA reports directly to the president. They're not within another agency, and the CIA does not. But in any case, I just wonder why this competition between CIA and NSA.
Professor Kate?
Saul, it's a great question. First of all, both agencies are within the national intelligence structure, so they both report to the Director of National Intelligence, who in turn reports to the president. They are in competition, although they have slightly different missions. The CIA is somewhat broader than the NSA's. The NSA is really focused on electronic communications alone. And the competition's deliberate. But it's also probably inevitable, which is they're competing for dollars in the federal budget. And so if you are looking at the federal budget, which is under enormous pressure to shrink, then you would say, look, I want to make sure I get money in next year's budget. And how do I do that? I do that by showing I'm being more aggressive, I'm being more successful, I'm being more achieving, and I have more that I need to do, that the demand is growing. We also have, in this whole country, and certainly in our government, a certain fascination with technology. So saying that you're going to spend money to have analysts analyze data, it's sort of hard to explain. You know, you have a bunch of very smart people sitting in a room analyzing data. Saying you're going to spend money to buy the newest and sharpest bit of technology, you know, a supercomputing center in Utah, for example, and it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars, but over time it's going to be worth it. We tend to, as a nation, gravitate towards the latter solution, even though it may be the former we really need.
Thank you, Saul. Let's get one more call in before a news break. Deb in Mequon. Hi, Deb.
Well, good morning. I just have one comment in regards to the actions of the NSA. Ask any librarian in regards to our 9/11 attacks, which allegedly were planned in part using our own internal library system emails. And I was wondering what the professor has to say in regards to that.
Yeah, we just have a minute before the news break.
Yeah, I think there's no question. You raise an excellent point, and that is that our own infrastructure is certainly being used by bad guys as well as by many others. I think the question is, how do we put in rules and laws and oversight so that we know that the surveillance isn't worse than the problem we're surveilling? And I think this is a real challenge.
Yeah. Well, we will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back talking more with our guest, Fred Kate, a distinguished professor, and C. Ben Dutton, professor of law at Indiana University. We are talking about reforming the NSA and what should be done to reform the NSA. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our conversation prompted in the companies that wrote an open letter to President Obama yesterday, Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and others, calling for reform on NSA surveillance. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Apple, Google, Microsoft, and five other tech companies are urging President Obama to overhaul the country's surveillance laws. And our guest law professor and cybersecurity expert is also talking with us about his proposals to reform the NSA. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, December 10th. And we wonder what questions you have or what kind of changes you want to see implemented when it comes to NSA surveillance. Are you concerned about Big Brother tracking your private information, phone calls, emails, other data? Or do you think this is necessary? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Fred Kate. He is a distinguished professor and C. Ben Dutton professor of law at Indiana University. He's also the director of the University Center for Applied Cybersecurity Research. Let's share this comment from Carol on Facebook to get into our next area of conversation. Carol says the NSA should be held more accountable. And you agree with that, Professor Kate?
I do agree with that. In other words, as I said, I think intelligence gathering is going to be necessary and important and will continue. What we want to make sure is that it takes place under a strict set of protections. And those protections mean both clear laws from Congress, and in fairness to the agency, Congress really hasn't updated its basic surveillance laws in decades. But it also means oversight to ensure that the agency is following the laws that exist. And it also means oversight to ensure that the agency is not breaking other laws. And I think one of the things that surprised many of us is the summer has been filled with revelations about the agency misleading Congress, lying to Congress, providing false information to Congress. And yet we haven't seen any of the normal responses we would expect if you or I were to lie under oath to Congress, which would be a special prosecutor or a contempt citation or enforcement by the Attorney General. And I think this, more than anything, would enhance the public's and industry's trust in the surveillance is if we saw enforcement of the laws rather than just this kind of nudge-nudge, wink-wink view towards the NSA's behavior.
Wisconsin Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner says that National Intelligence Director James Clapper should be prosecuted for lying to Congress. Clapper told a Senate Intelligence Committee in March that the NSA does not collect information on Americans in bulk. Do you agree with Sensenbrenner's assessment?
I do agree, and I agree not out of any disregard for Mr. Clapper, but rather because, you know, one of the most critical elements of our democracy is we believe in the rule of law, and that you and I will both be held accountable to a rule of law, and our leaders should also be held accountable to that rule. And you may very well remember that, you know, Mr. Clapper later in June went on NBC and said, look, I did lie. I told the least untruth possible. Well, none of us could get away with telling that to a court or to Congress. You know, don't go after me. I just told the least untruth possible. I don't think we should let our leaders, I don't think we should apply a lower standard to our leaders.
Yeah, so who or what oversees the NSA?
Well, it's a complicated, as you might expect. You know, the president has direct oversight over the NSA and the rest of the intelligence collection enterprise. Congress has oversight committees, but it has no direct authority. So it can't bring a prosecution. It can't fire somebody. It can't do anything other than, issue public statements and try to change the law. And then there is a court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which has to approve requests for certain types of surveillance. And we have seen over the summer and fall, as a number of their opinions have been made public, that they have repeatedly chastised the NSA for either not telling the truth or for not doing what it was told to do by the court. But again, they have no direct authority. They can refer matters to the Attorney General, but it's up to the Attorney General and the President to decide whether to enforce the law.
Let's take another call. Steve in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hi, Steve.
Yes, good morning. My question is this. There's obviously tremendous concern over what the NSA is collecting. Certainly they look at my emails, run them through a giant computer, and throw them away because I'm no threat to them or anybody else. However, if I go to a retail store, they collect data on me, keep it forever, and in fact sell it to others. Imagine I go to a drugstore, or anyone does, and buys what could be potentially a hugely embarrassing product. The fact that I bought them and how often I bought them is kept, stored, and sold. Google has a publicly stated mission as a company of knowing everything about everybody, but yet there's no outrage about that.
Yeah, how come we're not outraged about that and so concerned about the NSA, Fred Kate?
Yeah, a great point that Steve raises, and one that I think is also being much argued about in Washington right now. There are some differences. One is the government does not delete the data. It keeps it, and it keeps it for quite some time, decades. It used to be, for example, FBI records, when you turned 70, your FBI records were expunged. That's no longer true. The data is really kept forever. And another issue is, of course, that companies could certainly embarrass you, but they are subject to a lot of laws, especially around health data and financial data, and those laws are vigorously enforced. And so they might do it once, but they would not do it a second time because the penalties are quite significant. A third issue, of course, is that only the government can take really direct action against an individual, like prosecute them, put them in jail, detain them. These are powers that the rest of us and most of industry don't have. And so for this reason, I think people in this country, and certainly historically going all the way back to the founding fathers, have worried more about the government's role in collecting and using data than we have worried about industry, although now clearly, you know, both are important.
And bringing up the old argument, if I'm not plotting some dastardly deed with a terrorist on my email, why should I care if the government surveils me?
Okay, so you should care, and you should care for lots of reasons. One is because the vast majority of us aren't terrorists. I think we know that. And so when the government spends billions of dollars on these programs and they're not actually finding any terrorists, they're going to use these programs for other purposes. And we see this again and again. So they're going to use them instead to try to identify people who haven't paid parking tickets or who maybe cheat on their taxes. So we're all going to find ourselves connected to this system in one way or another. Now, a second thing is we don't know. In fact, we have very little evidence at all that the sophisticated computer algorithms the NSA and others are using, that they really work. And I spent 3 years on a National Academy of Sciences panel that was looking at exactly this question. We published our final report, and we could actually find not a single instance of these high-intensity data mining algorithms finding or preventing terrorism. If you think about how ineffective they are, just think about direct marketing. you know, direct marketing is using all the data it can possibly find to send you ads that will interest you. It has no legal restriction on using the data to try to interest you. It's restricted from doing other things with the data. You're not trying to hide from direct marketers, unlike terrorists who are trying to hide. And yet, you know, the vast majority of direct marketing I receive is of no interest to me at all. Well, there's no reason to think that the NSA is doing better than all of industry combined. And so another reason we might worry is the fear of being wrongly identified. And, of course, you're going to be identified without any recourse. No one's going to tell you. You're just suddenly going to be picked up, or you're going to be detained, or you're going to be denied a government benefit, or you're going to apply for a government job and you're going to be told you don't qualify. So you won't have any recourse. You won't have any chance to say, wait a minute, you took that email out of context, or you applied it to the wrong person. These are the types of things I think we should worry about.
John in New Berlin is with us now. Hi, John.
Hi. My question is kind of similar to what you were just answering now. I'm 54 years old, and I'm not aware of any negative impact from anybody collecting data on me, nor do I have any friends that ever expressed any negative impacts from data collected on them. So I'm wondering, you know, is this a, you know, one in 1 million kind of situation where we're fighting against? And I do know of situations where the data collected have protected people from businesses, from government, from terrorists, et cetera. So maybe I'm just naive, but I'd like to hear how likely I have been affected.
Again, as I said earlier, I don't have any idea, because the data, of course, is classified, as to how any individual has been affected, including me. And nor am I suggesting that we should not be collecting and using data. I'm just suggesting there should be oversight, there should be redress. If you think you have been acted on, you should be able to find out. Let me give you a really practical example. For years after 9/11, the government collected data on all airline passengers, and it used that data to block certain people from flying. For 3 years, you could not know that. You were simply told you couldn't fly. Go away. There was no redress. There was no legal right. There was nothing you could do about it. Finally, the government acted and said, no, we're going to provide you now with redress. And so what we found out is more than 50,000 people had been blocked from flying based on erroneous data, and that those people now can fly, because now they can go to the government and say, I want to take advantage of your redress system. I want to make sure. I think the other thing that we should all be worried about is not just us, but remember, our legal system is largely built to protect others, to protect minorities, to protect criminals, even real criminals, criminals we know are criminals, we still give legal rights to. And so why would we give criminals legal rights, but not give innocent members of the public legal rights against the NSA?
We're talking about the NSA and calls to reform the NSA. And we're welcoming your questions, your views on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Fred Kate, who is a professor of law at Indiana University and the director of the University Center for Applied Cybersecurity Research, talking about NSA reform and welcoming what you would like to see happen with the NSA. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. More calls. Dan in Chippewa is next. Hello, Dan.
Hi there. So when we talk about cybersecurity and such, it's just interesting to look at where we're going as a culture. We're being much more open with our data. Sites like Facebook and Instagram are basically encouraging us to share our entire lives online. And even data logging is getting to be quite a bit more prevalent. I mean, I have no doubt that I'm on record as having called into public radio more than once in the past year. And so I'm as outraged as anybody else at the NSA's transgressions, but I think that maybe this is just the way it is now in the world. This might just be what we have to accept.
It's just the way it is, Professor Kate?
You know, actually, I hear this a lot, and part of me really feels this. You know, I look around, particularly at younger people, and they're putting their whole lives online, and you're thinking, well, you know, why are we trying to protect data anymore if we are sort of openly living our lives in such a more visible way? But I think there are still reasons why we might worry about particularly the government having the ability to scoop up sort of everything. In other words, we're not just talking about data that you choose to put online or data that you know is going to be made public, for example, when you call in to National Public Radio, but rather data that you might anxiously have wanted to keep secret, data that you encrypted and then the NSA decrypted, data that might be very sensitive, financial information or health information. And I think what we find is that most people find some part of their lives that they would like to think they had some control over the information about. And that when we allow the NSA to work outside of the law, to not operate within a sort of accountability or an oversight process, that there's the great fear that agency will get access to data that really has nothing to do with its national security mission, a very important mission, but nevertheless that it will weaken all of us as a result, and that it will weaken us in tangible ways, like our own cybersecurity. You know, one of the things we know is actually kind of amusing is the NSA broke into the United Nations network, and when it broke in, it found the Chinese there. Well, you know, I'm not really sure that I want my government to be in the same level, regarded in the same way as the Chinese in terms of their respect for law in the cybersecurity environment. And now when we survey industry now reports that its single greatest fear in protecting its own data is no longer the Chinese, that's what it used to be, but instead it is fear of the U.S. government. And that's just not an attitude, that's not an approach between a government and the people that I think we want to encourage.
We mentioned in our first half hour that President Obama is scheduled to get a report this week from a 5-member panel of lawyers and security officials that is reviewing the NSA and the collection of all this data. And this is the panel that you submitted your proposals to, Professor Kate?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so the president, in speaking about this in an interview last week, says that he will propose some self-restraint on the NSA and to initiate some reforms to give people more confidence. He said that Americans are rightly sensitive to needs to self-preserve their privacy and to maintain internet freedom, and so am I. Do you have confidence that President Obama is going to, I don't know, do the right thing?
Well, you know, that's a really good and hard question. The president has been, to be honest, schizophrenic about privacy. On the one hand, in some instances, he's been very strong about it. And you might remember that as a candidate, his own passport records were stolen and exposed publicly. So he's had some personal experience with this. On the other hand, in the national security area, the president has pretty much turned a deaf ear to most claims for oversight or for privacy or for any serious attention to this issue. And so I fear that many of these proposals are going to fall on deaf ears. But just as we started the hour, I do think this point about the 8 companies who are weighing in, these are really serious companies. These are companies who can pick up the phone and get the president on the phone. And so if they're telling him, look, this is hurting our competitiveness abroad, this is hurting our economy, this is hurting the trust in which the public has in using online the online environment for transactions, then maybe the president will do something more serious, and I certainly will hope so.
Ray in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Ray.
I want to address the caller 2 calls back who said he's fine with the government collecting his data and his friend's data. Well, there's a country he could move to right now where the government's doing all that. It's called China. You know, and it used to be countries like East Germany that we were horrified. They had neighbors spying on neighbors. So in a way, I have to agree with your guest. The government is totally in the wrong when we send soldiers to Afghanistan and Iraq. How would we have felt as soon as they elected a new government there, they decided to start spying on every. I thought we went over there for freedom. What does freedom really mean to America? And that's what's very disturbing to me, how many of us are willing to lay down and let this government walk all over us. Ask the people in Boston if searching everybody in Boston's records helped them find the Boston bombers. I'd like to suggest just the opposite happened.
Professor Kate.
Well, I mean, I tend to agree with the caller, and I do think the comparison with other countries is important. We spent a lot of time and energy, and especially this president has, trying to promote a sort of internet bill of rights, really targeting countries like Iraq and North Korea and China and Iran, where we think it's very important that people have freedom to communicate freely without fear of censorship and without fear of being monitored. And it's just a little ironic that while on the one hand our State Department has been vigorously pursuing this mission around the world, it turns out our NSA has been vigorously opposing that mission by vacuuming up data not only about other countries, but about the United States as well.
Yeah. So what's the takeaway for listeners from this hour?
Well, I would say it's this. Surveillance is here to stay. It's going to continue. It serves useful purposes. And I think most of us would not want to see it stop because we want to live in a safe and secure country. But that what we want to see is vigorous oversight, meaningful, effective oversight, and that oversight would impose limits on what the NSA can get, can collect, and what it can do with the data once it has collected it. There are no limits right now on reuse of data. And that it would also include accountability for senior public officials who are responsible for overseeing this system, that when they do tell lies to Congress, when they do mislead the American public, there would be repercussions for that, just like we would expect for any public official in any other area of our lives.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Fred Kate, Distinguished Professor of Law at Indiana University, Director of the University's Center for Applied Security, Cybersecurity Research. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. Thanks to Marika Saval and Robin Cherry, who also produce these programs. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come coming up in our next hour. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be back with another edition of On Your Money. We'll talk about using credit cards. We will talk about preventing post-holiday financial struggles and making year-end contributions to college savings plans. That's coming up on Your Money in our next hour. Tomorrow, by the way, after 6 o'clock, we're going to talk about the Happy Holidays, Merry Christmas debate with a guest who says that he has the final word on the subject. That's tomorrow after 6. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.